Good morning. The first time my husband and I came to Schenectady in the 50s, he was assigned to the GE physics training program, and we were not inclined to settle down and create roots in what we both felt to be only a temporary home. But as time went on and several assignments later, he was assigned permanently to the research laboratory in Niskayuna, a dream come true because we had come to love the area and our new friends. With, hopefully, our new permanence and a growing family, we decided to look for a church in which we could not only believe, but could participate in as well. We had head start in this respect, at least my husband did, for he was that rarity, a born and bred Unitarian out of Groton, Massachusetts. I, on the other hand, had a lapsed Catholic father and a Russian emigre mother who were so busy establishing their podiatry practices that they had little time for organized religion. Imagine, podiatrists charged only a dollar a foot in those days. My sister, however, discovered Unitarianism when she attended Tufts University, which was founded by the Universalists, a guiding principle of which was to bring people together from different backgrounds and experiences. She blossomed, and I followed in her footsteps, finding my future husband at Tufts to boot. Once settled in Schenectady, George attended the Unitarian Church while I taught in Sunday school. I was impressed by the few services I was able to attend, and a few words really impressed me. And service is its prayer. The first inkling we had that a new building was even being considered occurred at a chance meeting between our ambitious minister, Bill Gold, and a parishioner in a sporting goods store. Reverend Gold was an avid bird watcher, and the parishioner came upon him trying out an expensive pair of field glasses. The congregant mumbled something about, "Why don't you just ask the congregation to move to the front of the church?" It was as if lightning had struck. Crusades were based on lesser words. And Bill Gold said, "Yes, yes, we must change the shape of the church to bring us all closer together." Lengthy discussions on the board level followed, and soon two factions arose. One pushing the idea that it should take on the shape of a square, and the other that it should have a triangular configuration. What to do? Being good Unitarians and open to compromise, it was decided to cost a coin. I think it was a nickel. And do you know which faction won? Neither. They liked the shape of the nickel. Somewhere there is a nickel which should be adored and venerated. But with a church budget consisting at that time of only $20,172.30, with a few green stamps thrown in, the nickel had to be returned to circulation. During this period, about 1959, a site committee was established, and we soon became possessors of the Steinmetz lot on Wendell Avenue. It was at this time when our minister, Bill Gold, who was a strong supporter and leader of the new church project, began acting strangely. Always a thrifty man, he had to be cautioned about referring to the new lot on Wendell Avenue as the promissory land, and signing his letters eternally in your debt. As time went on, a number of architects of international reputation were considered, and Edward Durell Stone was chosen. During this interval, some people complained that we were being too materialistic, that we should note that some of the Eastern religions require no property or possessions to be effective. In response, a member who had traveled a good deal told of a conversation he had had with a Bedouin man who was tending olive trees from which he had just harvested a basket of olives. "Do you own the land?" the member had asked. "No," said the Bedouin. "The land belongs to Allah." "What about the trees?" "The trees too are Allah's," was the reply. The Unitarian marveled at this man who seemed so unencumbered by material considerations, at least until the Bedouin said, "Of course, I own the olives." In some ways, my career in Schenectady runs parallel to that of the church, for I soon decided that I would like to attend church on a more consistent basis, and one of my first assignations I made was to join the Women's Alliance, a most interesting group of ladies who did much more than provide cookies for church events. I was so fortunate to work alongside many of whom have become legendary in this congregation. I'd like to mention a few of these, for they deserve to have their names echoed once again in these halls. Lest we forget, Carol Valentine, who was president of the congregation and active in Planned Parenthood. In fact, every year Planned Parenthood fundraiser is held in her name. Cal Chestnut, who was instrumental in founding Schenectady Community College. It was Katie Rich's idea to form EBWA, the Evening Branch Women's Alliance, so that working women could be part of the alliance. And Katie was the first woman ever anywhere to become a television broadcaster, and for years had her own radio show on WGY and a series of public affairs programs on WMHT-TV. And Gertrude Heidenthal, who worked with Einstein in Princeton and provided some of the funding for the beautiful red carpeting. Indeed, it would be difficult to name any woman in the Alliance without extolling their work in education, science, community service, and public affairs. As time went on, I became the church oracle. Now, that's my word, not the church's. I looked it up, and it means someone who spreads good tidings. And I announced all the church's activities for the coming weeks on Sundays and used humor to make my points. It was great fun, but I still remembered, and service is its prayer. I was chairman of Blood Services for the American Red Cross, president of the American Association of University Women, and to my greatest joy, president of Planned Parenthood. I could do no less. I'm not as active as I once was, and I have lots of time to reflect upon what goes on in my life. It may surprise you, but I'd like to leave you with a poem that may explain me. It's called Echoes. My head is full of voices. No, not the kinds you think, the ones that tell you they're from God then push you to the brink, but rather they are echoes of words I've heard before, but they are now so muted as if behind a door. But if that door opened and the cobwebs cleared away, I'd still find them jumbled and confused in every way. For we receive directions from the day that we are born on how to live and prosper, to prevail and to conform. No borrower or a lender be, the voices all relate. but others speak in unison about the interest rate. A penny saved is 2 cents taxed. Does that mean I'd be better to throw my money to the winds and end up as a debtor? Eat only what is good for you, but always clean your plate. Never waste a single crumb. Be sure to watch your weight. A drink of wine is just sublime when used in celebration. Beware the shot when it is not, for then it's devastation. Do unto others if you must, and turn the other cheek, but keep a loaded gun on hand to keep from seeming weak. Many hands make light work. Someone else has said it. I'll agree entirely if I get all the credit. Is it better to give than it is to receive? I've also heard the reversal. Save up all your gains for that day when it rains and try to refrain from dispersal. All these I have heard through the years, and for this I am now close to tears. To live my life faintly, at least somewhat saintly, I can't even count on the seers. They said that when I grew older, I'd grow in wisdom too. But my youth has now passed by. I still don't have a clue. To what the world is all about, I could not pass a test. So I'll just keep on living. It's the thing that I do best.